Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is the Ottawa Board of Education against Spelling. Mr. Izzo.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is John Izzo, and I am representing the plaintiffs in this case, which are two school districts, the Ottawa Township High School District and the Elementary District, also in Ottawa, Illinois, and four families of students with disabilities, special needs students in those districts. May it please the Court. Our complaint seeks declaratory relief that against both the federal and state agencies that administer education programs and their administrators based on how those administrators are implementing the federal No Child Left Behind Act and vis-a-vis another federal statute, the IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, and the implementing state laws and rules. Our position is that the actions required by these officials against the school officials to meet the No Child Left Behind Act are irreconcilable with the mandate of the IDEA that the special needs children should receive an education that is individually tailored to meet their special needs as determined by their own IEP teams, their own team of professionals, including the parents, rather than by a standardized single assessment, as the administrators of these laws would require. But the district court here and the defendants have said that we cannot pursue this position because we have no standing, we have no harm here. The elements of standing are agreed upon and discussed in the briefs, and it's just the first two of those elements that are at issue. Is there an injury in fact, and is there a causal relationship between the defendant's actions and that injury? With regard to injury in fact, for the families involved, their students with disabilities do not and will not receive, cannot receive, the same level and type of education and the programs appropriate to their cognitive abilities to the detriment of their educational, social...
Could you please be concrete? What is the injury that the two districts suffer?
The districts or the families, Your Honor. You want me to address the districts or the families first?
Districts.
The districts, the injury there is that you're asking public school officials to face a choice between which of these mandates to...
Making choices is not an injury. Concretely describe an injury. Money is an injury. Does this cost the districts anything?
Eventually it will, Your Honor, because we have to start these programs. We have to refill...
I don't know what eventually it will means. Does it cost the district something now, and if so, what?
Judge, right now, they have to adopt, under state law, what's called a school improvement plan. They have to channel their resources to that particular item. And in that sense, they have to redirect their resources and redirect the focus of the education from skill training to these students.
I'm lost. Is this a requirement of state law? If it's a requirement of state law, then you can't get any relief here.
It is a requirement of state law that has to be approved by the federal government under the No Child Left Behind Act, because the state of Illinois has chosen to accept federal funds. They say, Illinois, you have to adopt rules to implement, and you have to have your rules reviewed by us.
If you don't like this, then it sounds like your grievance is with the state. If the state does something that imposes costs on a local school district, then your grievance is with the state.
Our grievance is with both, Your Honor. But the state of Illinois, in order to adopt the rules which we're suggesting that they must to make these two goals of these two statutes mesh, they have to get it approved by the Department of Education. In fact, the state of Illinois has passed a statute in 2005 which does exactly what we're asking for, but says it is subject to U.S. government approval, which U.S. government approval has not given, and that is that to measure AYP and measure academic assessment growth of special needs students, you look at the testing as determined by the IEP of the students. The state of Illinois passed a law saying that's what we'll do if the federal government approves. The federal government hasn't yet approved. So our grief has to be with the federal government and federal officials in this case, because they have refused to allow the state of Illinois to implement what the General Assembly of Illinois says should be the way that this law is implemented. And I want to point out that
I don't understand how that's an injury.
With regard to the districts, again, I believe I submitted as an injury to force school officials to say, look, down the road, you have to comply with both of these things, but you have to start implementing it now. And these school officials are between the rock and a hard place. They have to say, are we supposed to be assessing the students according to specialized tests and measuring their progress that way only, or are we supposed to be doing what the IEP is telling us we're supposed to do and have individualized testing and the education that goes to their special needs? The families are also plaintiffs in this case.
You have to realize, you have to listen to this, that this is all completely vague. If there were something concrete, if the argument were we had to hire Jones and he cost us $50,000 to prepare this plan, or here's an actual case where we have been ordered to spend Z in order to do both of these things, then there might be something concrete.
Judge,
so far you haven't articulated anything like that.
Judge, because it's a long process. It's a long process that's already begun because both school districts, from the time that this lawsuit was filed, had failed to meet AYP for two successive years. That means they were both under the state early warning.
Counsel, I have no idea what you're talking about. Right. Whatever that acronym might mean, it's a specialty of the field, and you have to understand we're generalists.
I understand, Judge. AYP is a term.
Please stop. No acronyms. Use English words.
The No Child Left Behind Act and the state implementation statutes say that each state has to measure the progress of its students as a whole and each certain subcategories of the students in that district. That's called adequate yearly progress. And they have to test these students under certain standardized tests and determine whether all the students in the district as a whole and each subcategory are making sufficient progress. And if the school district as a whole or any of those categories...
So is it your position that you have to administer tests that you would not otherwise administer and that those are costly?
Well, we have to administer tests which are not suitable to these students. So for the families...
Would not otherwise be administered.
Correct, Your Honor.
Are they costly?
There is a cost to the tests, yes. I don't have a comparison between those tests and the substitute tests, which we think are more appropriate. But our point is, with regard to the families, this is detrimental to the families.
There's no difference in the... If you want to administer test A and it costs $5 a student, and the state wants you to administer test B and it costs $5 a student, it's very difficult to see a loss.
Your Honor, I don't think that the harm was only determined through financially. But even if it were, these districts have to are in the process where if they don't comply with both, or they will lose state aid of all sorts. So they are right now, we don't wait 4 years or 5 years when we haven't met the growth for that period of time and then say, poof, now we lose all state aid. We are supposed to be now working to make progress for each category of students and the school population as a whole. And we think that that is detrimental to the school districts to say, wait a minute, I'm being pushed in two different directions here, and eventually I'm going to lose state aid, but I want to know right now, is this what I'm supposed to do? Because, with regard to the families...
If you say, is this what you're supposed to do, the normal thing somebody does is ask a lawyer. When the person asks a federal court, that's called a request for an advisory opinion. You go to the federal court when there's a real injury, when somebody has said, well, you failed in your duty. Here are the consequences.
Judge, I believe
everything you say makes it sound more and more like you're asking a judge when the district should have asked you for a legal opinion, which you can write out and give to the district.
Judge, they have to go to the state of Illinois, and the state of Illinois has to approve these school improvement plans. But at the same time, the families involved are saying, wait a minute, we don't have the participation that we should have in the education of our students because this, our child's IEP does not call for this kind of test, teaching the test. They're supposed to be learning cognitive skills. Some of these students are very severely handicapped, and to ask them to take the ACT or some other standardized test that where there are several grade levels below that, and to try to teach those children to take that test as opposed to meeting the goals of their program is detrimental to the education of these students, and that can't be quantified in dollars and cents. That is real harm to these families, and we can't put a dollar amount on that, but it does hurt them, and it's happening now because in the high school district, they are implementing programs in how to teach the test, to how to teach this, the, these high school juniors who may be four, five, 6 grade years behind their age level, how to take a test in algebra or literature rather than some of their life skills that their particular needs in their IEPs tell them that they're supposed to be doing. I will reserve the rest of my comments for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rizzo. Ms. Klein.
May it please the Court, Elisa Klein for the United States. Very briefly, as the district court held, the plaintiffs have not identified any concrete injury and or any injury that's not attributable to their own voluntary choices.
Let me ask you, that one of the big criticisms of the No Child Left Behind Act is that it requires teachers to teach to the test. Hypothetically, if a student has an individualized instruction plan due to some disability, and assume that there's 15 hours a week of remedial reading that's required for that student to meet that individualized instruction plan, and the district, to satisfy No Child Left Behind, says we just can't do 15 hours of remedial reading here with this student. Cut it down to 2 hours a week and spend 13 hours teaching to the test. Would the parents of that child have standing to bring a lawsuit?
Your Honor, first, again, teaching to the test, I understand that there are criticisms, but understand that teaching to the test means teaching students to be proficient in reading and math. And both the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act and No Child Left Behind have the same goals, including with respect to students with disabilities, which is giving them access to the general curriculum, reading and math. And when Congress reauthorized the IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, in 2004, it explicitly cross-referenced the No Child Left Behind requirements, including the assessment requirements. All this is in 20 U.S.C. 1412 A16C. So there is no conflict if the IEP is not teaching, is not geared to teach students to read, then that's a problem with the...
Counsel, your answer is that the plaintiffs lose on the merits, but I thought my colleague's question had to do with standing. All right, let's suppose this is a problem, that teaching to the wrong test means that the district is delivering an education that it thinks is the wrong education. Students may be injured by that. The district may think it's injured by that. I appreciate the response that Congress may have made a bad decision, but that sounds like the merits rather than like standing. Is there a reason why there is no standing if this statute encourages teaching to the wrong test?
Well, there has to be an allegation that the teaching is inconsistent with some statutory provision. And I understand that the merits and standing are related here, but what we don't have here is any claim other than that the district, for its own reasons, is doing something that it thinks is inconsistent with one of the statutes. But, you know, again, the statutes here, they cross-reference...
But why isn't that standing? Suppose the district says, we think educationally the best thing to do is to give test X. And the federal government is now telling us that we must give text Y. That's a concrete loss in their ability to teach. just as it would be if the school district said to somebody who was teaching history, you've got to stop teaching history and start teaching math. I assume that's a litigatable issue.
Not in terms of the relief they're seeking here. And if they're saying invalidate provisions of a federal spending statute, I'm absent a constitutional challenge, that can't be done. So whether it's viewed as the merits or viewed as a redressability problem.
I don't understand what you mean when you say that can't be done. Is that because there's no standing? I mean, think of cases like South Dakota against Dole. The district court seemed to say that in cases based on federal spending power, there can never be any standing. And in that event, the Supreme Court's opinion in South Dakota against Dole was unconstitutional because it was an advisory opinion. And all of the opinions that are issued in Medicaid cases where a state brings a lawsuit saying, we're in the Medicaid program, but we shouldn't be required to pay for service X, all of those should be dismissed, but in fact they're all decided on the merits.
The difference here is that if the school districts say two federal spending statutes are in conflict, that's not a constitutional challenge. That's not like South Dakota versus Dole. If they were in conflict, they're not, but imagine they were in conflict, then their remedy would be to just take funds under one of the statutes. A court cannot strike down conditions on receipt of federal funds absent a constitutional violation. But Congress could have two federal spending programs that couldn't be simultaneously implemented. It didn't here.
Well, you can't be serious, counsel. Congress on day one passes a law under the spending power, and it says if you take our money, you must do X. And 6 months later, it repeals that statute. But the Secretary of Education insists that the repealed statute be enforced. Are you saying that a court couldn't consider a challenge to that decision by the Secretary just because it was based on the repealer rather than the Constitution?
No, Your Honor. Again, I'm distinguishing.
Right.
No.
So that's the problem. We have a claim here that two statutes are inconsistent. There may be a big problem because the plaintiffs are saying that the older statute repeals the newer one. Right? That can't possibly win. But it's a merits problem, not a standing problem.
Well, the district court did discuss the merits and said, if you look at the 2004 reauthorization of IDEA, it explicitly cross-references the earlier statute. So there can be no claim that it repealed the earlier statute. And again, Your Honor's question went to implementation. If there's not a challenge here to a specific agency action, and if there were, it wouldn't make any sense because the 2004 amendments also explicitly incorporate what the Secretary did. So they explicitly refer to the Secretary's regulations. So what we have here is no allegation that anything the Secretary did or anything that Congress did is causing concrete harm.
Is it your position, Ms. Klein, that if a school board cannot harmonize, in their view, the mandates of the two statutes, they just have to opt to take one?
They certainly can't ask a court to strike down one of the statutes. So if a school district can't simultaneously implement both, it should decline funds under one. But here, everything is premature and speculative. The regulations build in all sorts of flexibility. School districts can ask for a waiver to exceed certain caps. One of the school districts testified that it doesn't even give the type of tests that they say they want to give and that would be subject to the caps. The other school district testified that they've gotten waivers. So my point here is that there's nothing caused by the defendants that they're complaining about. It's entirely speculative whether these school districts will even be affected by regulatory caps. They don't identify any imminent concrete harm. And so as the district court concluded, there's just nothing justiciable in this lawsuit. Unless the court has questions, I'll go to the state.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Klein. Ms. Welsh.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. The federal defendants spoke mostly about the statutory scheme here and the impediments to plaintiff's standing with regard to how the two statutes interface. And I'd like to address, if it's all right with the court, the more factual, the narrower basis for the district court's finding that the plaintiffs lacked standing here. And the federal defendants alluded to this in saying that the plaintiff's claimed injury is really quite speculative. If we go back to their complaint and their motion for summary judgment, their complaint at the time was that corrective action, which is a severe sanction, they have to, there may be receivership, there may be systemic curriculum change. This was their claimed injury, that they were going to be put into corrective action because they kept failing academic yearly progress standard that the state has implemented. But this became untrue. In fact, both the high school district in 1906 and the elementary school in 2006 and the elementary school district in 2005 both achieved the yearly progress goal. And so both halted in what they seemed to feel was a direct march, a baton march directly toward corrective action. So what this event tells us is that the plaintiff's argument...
I don't know why that is inconsistent with standing. Right? Suppose there's a rule that the president of the school board has to weigh less than 200 pounds, and that causes the president of the school board to spend more time exercising and running on treadmills. Would you say he lacks standing to challenge the rule just because at the annual weigh-in he was 199?
Well, I guess I don't understand your question, Your Honor.
There may be costs in achieving compliance with a rule. Right, and the rule may be objectionable, not because somebody is unable to comply with it, but because it's costly to comply with it. I gave you an example of a case where it was possible to comply with the rule, but costly to do so. And one would ordinarily think there is standing to object to the rule because of the costs incurred in compliance. That's the question I'm asking. Your position seems to be the school districts have so far been able to comply with Rule X, therefore they lack standing to challenge it. But that would be true only if compliance with the rule were free. Is compliance free?
Your Honor, the compliance, when a school district asks for funds under either the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act or No Child Left Behind, they say, we want this money, and in return for that money, we are telling you that we can comply with both, with the conditions of a particular statute.
I understand that. Look, remember one of the examples I gave when talking to Mr. Izzo. The federal Medicaid statute, another one of these cooperative programs, gives large grants to states to provide medical care. We hear litigation every day filed by states saying things like, yes, but you shouldn't require us to cover medical condition X. And those are decided on the merits, because as long as the state takes the money, it has to abide by the conditions, and it can litigate about them. No one says there, well, you could turn down the money, therefore you lack standing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That argument, if it were accepted, would mean there's no justiciability in the Medicaid cases, that there was no justiciability in South Dakota against Dole, and so on. And courts don't say that, so I don't understand why we should say it here. Let me come back to the question that I've been asking everyone. Are there costs in complying with these rules?
Yes, of course.
Then why don't those costs create standing?
Because the federal government pays for those costs.
Then you think all the Medicaid cases should be dismissed for lack of standing. Is that what you think?
I think two things. I think several things. One is that in terms of standing, the argument I was making was that the harm, if there is a cost to the plaintiff's school districts, a financial cost, that cost at this juncture is speculative. They claimed it in 2005. They have not incurred that cost in 2008. They are not in corrective action. And that, in turn, makes it too speculative for. But
now you're coming back to the proposition that if the president of the school district can get under 200 pounds, he can't challenge the rule requiring him to spend an hour a day on a treadmill.
Well, Your Honor, we're here defending the district court's decision that the plaintiffs lack standing. We would be delighted if the court wants to affirm that summary judgment on the merits.
I'm lost. One should defend a judgment only if it's correct. Are you saying that you don't actually believe the plaintiffs lack standing, but the district judge said so you're saying that anyway?
No, Your Honor. I'm saying that alternatively, if the court disagrees with the district court's and our arguments that the plaintiffs lack standing, it may affirm on any ground in the record, which would include the merits.
It's not a ground for affirmance. The decision that there is no standing means the case is dismissed for lack of justiciability.
Correct. As we said in our jurisdictional statement.
That there's no jurisdiction.
Correct.
The merits differ from jurisdiction. It's not a ground for affirming the judgment. It might be a ground for a different judgment or a better judgment.
Well, as Your Honor noticed, I'm sure that the court entered summary judgment. It didn't dismiss for lack. It didn't really dismiss for lack of jurisdiction. It entered summary judgment. If that was an error, then certainly this court could correct it. But I think the central problem here appears to be not that anything that the defendants are doing violates the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act, which is really the core of the plaintiff's complaint. It's that the plaintiffs, particularly the school districts, disagree with the federal government's education philosophy as espoused in the No Child Left Behind Act. And that what that act says is that all children, including disabled children, should be tested as much as possible the same way across the board, that there are universal testing. It does allow, and this is, I think, an error in how the plaintiffs present it, the No Child Left Behind Act permits children to be tested under alternative testing methods and two alternative, that is to say, lesser standards. It just doesn't allow them to count all the lesser standard scores to see if they achieved the academic yearly progress. And this is so because both the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act and No Child Left Behind both have as their core to not have low expectations for these children.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. We ask that the court affirm.
Anything further, Mr. Rizzo?
Briefly, Your Honor, a couple of points. We heard from counsel just now that, it would be consistent with the statute to basically do double testing, that you could take the standardized tests and also the ones that are called for the IEP. Again, that in and of itself still doesn't take one.
Does the district do that? Does it administer two sets of tests?
I think with regard to some students, it might do that, Your Honor. I'm not sure if that's in the record or not. Hmm. But there's still the cost. We still have to teach in order to make the annual adequate progress toward the standardized test. That's the test that we have to meet under the No Child Left Behind Act and the Illinois implementing legislation. She says that we somehow disagree with No Child Left Behind Act. No, we're trying to make the two goals of the two statutes and how they're implemented mesh. We want to show that students with disabilities are progressing, but the students...
And then I'm completely lost about what this lawsuit is about. I thought you were saying that there were parts of the No Child Left Behind Act that were superseded by an earlier statute. If you say we're trying to make this mesh, then the argument must be that you think there's some regulation issued by the Department of Education that's invalid under the statute. But I didn't see in your brief any challenge to a regulation issued by the Secretary.
Your Honor, our direction is toward the whole scheme by the state and the federal governments in their implementing legislation and implementing rules requiring special needs children to have their assessments measured through standardized tests rather than through the test that their individualized education programs say they should be assessed. That's what we're asking for. If you look at our complaint, the declaratory judgment, we're asking that the
What are you asking for concretely?
To
a declaration that a particular regulation is invalid?
Yes, Your Honor. To the extent...
And what regulation is that?
The federal regulations that put a cap...
What regulation? That question should be answered with a number. It's so-and-so CFR such-and-such.
Yes, Your Honor. I don't have the exact number, but it's the federal regulation that says that we cannot, that you're supposed to use the standardized tests with regard to special needs students, and there's a cap of 1%, no more that you can allow it for 1% of the students with their individualized program, but not more than that. That is the federal regulation and the implementing state law and the implementing state regulations that say the same thing. And this we have to follow the state, but the state, because they accepted federal funds, has to do with the federal government. They have to get their program approved by them. And Illinois, like I said, the General Assembly tried to help us out here, but so far the U.S. Department of Education won't let them off the hook on it.
Sir, is it your position that even with the alternative test, that an injury occurs simply because time is involved, or less time is available for the disabled student?
Yes, Your Honor. If we are required to have the students take the standardized test, and if we are
required... Or even the alternative test.
Well, we believe it should be whatever the local individualized program says how those students... That's the educational injury to them. And the parents are part of that team. The way IDEA works is that's part of a plan, and the parents have a participation in that, along with their teachers, their local teachers. It's not mandated from the State Board of Education or the local Board of Education. It's a local team. That's the mechanism for IDEA, and it's inconsistent to say...
Are you saying it cannot operate? Is that the harm that you're trying to have us focus on, that individualized plan can't exist?
There's an inconsistency, Your Honor, between... saying that the students have to take a standardized test and be assessed on that when their IEP says no. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.